My first guest is a poet. He is hardly the first poet to be on this program, lo these many years, but he is among the best, out with his first collection of poetry, oddly titled, I think, Grady Chambers, and welcome to the radio show, North American Stadiums. I think oddly titled for if you're walking in a what we used to call bookstores and you see titles of different poetry books, you go, wow. I think it would appeal to a lot of people going, wow, I wonder what this is about. It is, in a sense, about some stadiums. How are you, Grady?
I'm doing very well, Rick. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Oh, no, it's my pleasure. I was charmed and delighted by your book. I don't know you. I know your mom. I do know something about you. I do know that on Sunday, September 16th, you were in Brooklyn giving a reading, were you not?
I was, that's correct, yes, on the occasion of my sister's wedding, so a happy one indeed.
Well, you were with my old friend, one of America's leading poets and a sort of self-taught poet and a former Chicago newspaper gal, as I would say, named Patricia Smith. Did you know Pat before?
You know, I knew Pat's work before, but I had never met her, and in fact, I did not get the chance to meet Patricia last weekend because she had an injury, so she in the end was not able to attend the reading that we were supposed to do together. So somebody had to fill in for her.
Well, it's hard to fill in for Patricia Smith. Believe me, I can't wait, Grady, till you meet her. You're Chicago born and bred, and you obviously, I am pretty sure, grew up in a house filled with all sorts of books. What were some of your early inspirations?
Yeah, very, very much so. Yeah, I mean, I think the house I grew up in really had a huge influence on me as a reader, of course, but also ultimately my work much later as a writer. Before I was ever a writer, you know, I was an avid reader, and I remember being young and sort of picking books off my parents' shelves. And, you know, they were big-time anti-war protesters in the 1960s.
Sure.
And so their shelves were filled with a lot of beat-era writers. Jack Kerouac, Allen Ginsberg, Gary Snyder.
Gregory Corso, William Burroughs, that whole gang. So those are some of your early influences. You know, one of the interesting things, too, Grady, I think you went to Francis Parker for much of your grammar school and high school, did you not?
I did. That's
you know, correct. Francis Parker had a dramatic effect on my friend and another great writer, David Mamet. He didn't spend a lot of time at Parker, but he spent enough to really, you know, sort of get the writing bug there. Did you? What was there something strange in the water on Clark and Belden up there?
there very well may have been.
Yeah, I bet.
It's a great school and a great place to be a creative individual. The high school English classes had a big influence on me, and in a number of them, that was my first experience really of both canonical poetic work, but also in some cases some more contemporary work. So, you know, alongside reading Whitman and Dickinson. I had teachers who were also introducing us to some younger contemporary authors, and it was neat to see work that was written in an English that has commonly spoken.
Grady Chambers, the author, his debut collection is North American Stadiums. One of the interesting things to me is that I certainly, as a young person, was drawn to words too. But though I liked poetry, there was something about me that made me hopelessly insecure about writing poetry. And I'm very curious, knowing the sort of reading list one must have had at Francis Parker, and then where'd you go to college?
I went to Vassar College.
Okay. At both places, where one's reading starts to be either, or reading habits start to be either seduced by or drawn to poetry. Could you tell me your particular case?
Yeah, for me, most of the reading and most of the writing that I did creatively in college was actually fiction. I was a political science major, and just by chance, I happened to be put into a English class my first semester at Vassar, in which there was a creative writing component to the course, and that was my first time really writing, being forced to write a short story, and I liked it very much. And I made sure every, if not every semester, then at least once a year from that point on, to take a creative writing class to sort of just balance out some of the more analytical, theoretical writing that I was doing in my political science and history classes. So in college, really, I was writing primarily short stories and primarily reading fiction. And then my final year there, I took a class on contemporary poetry, and that was my first experience really reading a lot of contemporary work, and my first experience writing poetry. So it, to me, the interest was really, I had already been writing short fiction, but this was another form to explore for my writing, and it's one that ultimately I fell in love with.
Well, I must tell you, and I hope you take this as high praise, that your poems, and I think there are about, I didn't count them, just by rough guess, 30, 35 or so in the book, they're all relatively short. They have the feel, to me, of stories. How do you take that?
I completely agree. They have that feeling to me as well. And I think largely the reason for that is because when many of the poems in that book, my impulse, the sort of seed that started those poems was a story. Oftentimes in my process as a writer, I'm looking back into memory at an event or a day that I want to explore in the work. So story and telling a story is really, for me, oftentimes the triggering impulse of the poem. So I think it is no accident that they have that feel.
If you'd indulge me, I want to read one. Could I read one?
Absolutely.
I wanted you to read one, too, in the second segment of this interview. But I was grabbed by most of the poems here. I was terribly grabbed by this poem, A Summer. In June, my dog died, but the sex shop on Belmont, in June, my dog died. By the sex shop on Belmont, a guy carried a sign with last days printed in fat black letters, and he could be forgiven for thinking so. The city was steaming. Commuters shook open their papers. Capitalism seemed to collapse, then didn't. Men howled from their jail cells all across the South. I wanted to feel real grief, and did, the way my mother lifted the dead dog off the vet's metal slab, then held it to her chest as if it were a child and merely sleeping. But driving home, she showed me the first house she lived in with my father. That night we cried, lit a candle, drank cold white wine on the dark back porch. What I mean is it felt good to sit there. It felt like I could feel time open outward like a swimmer opens water. In July, an ex-girlfriend called about a jacket she'd never given back. We made plans. By August, I'd forgotten the sign, but remembered the man standing under the flat sky, diminished the gray traffic passing him by, behind him. The heat broke. August kept on going. I drove my mother to the shore, scattered the dog's ashes, dove in. That, young man, is a lovely piece of work. I did not do it total.
Thank you.
I did not do it total justice because it was a cold reading. But it brings a certain part of the city and a certain a number of events to life for me. How do you poetry always, Grady Chambers, mystifies me, because I don't know, as a newspaper man and a sometimes creative writer, I'm always revising, always futzing around, and the best poems, such as that one, seem to come out fully grown. That cannot be true, is it, Grady?
All too rarely is that true. I wish it were. It would make the whole process a lot faster. But no, revision for me, as I think it is for most writers, is a critical part of the process, and it's something that I spend far more time revising, I think, than I do creating the actual draft in the first place. Really, for me, you know, the initial challenge is just getting something that has a beginning, middle, and end on the page, and then by doing so, I have a sense that I at least have the reassurance that the piece has some kind of shape to it.
Yeah.
That it's really in revision that I go back in and see what is really the heart of the thing that I am at work on. And, you know, for me, oftentimes it's a process of just stripping back to find the essential skeleton to what is there.
Well, what is there in North American stadiums is a revelation, and it's a charm, and it's a provocative. It is everything poetry should be in essence. You can learn more about Grady Chambers by going to his website. He has a cool website, Grady, G-A-R-D-Y, Chambers. I'm not going to insult you by spelling that, .com. Grady, hang on. I want you to read a poem, and I want to talk to you about what it's like, having never done it, to tell your parents, well, Mom and Dad, I want to be a poet. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's like, well, it's short of being, you know, a bank robber, I suppose, would be their reaction. I'll tell you first that the Steve Cochran Show has free White Sox tickets for you Monday between 8:30 and 9. I'll be right back. Welcome back to After Hours with me, Rick Kogan. My guest is Grady Chambers, a child of Chicago, who now lives in Philadelphia and who has just published his debut, the first of what I imagine, based on this, will be many collections of his poetry. He will be at the Poetry Foundation this coming Wednesday with another poet, Henri Cole, who is the man, is he not, Grady Chambers, who could have selected these poems for the Max Ritva Poetry Prize, yes?
He is indeed, and Henri is one of the most celebrated and, to me, best contemporary poets, so the reading Wednesday is not to be missed for the chance to come hear him read, and I will be reading alongside him, and it's a privilege to do so.
Is that daunting for you?
You know, it's really mostly exciting. I'm looking forward to the chance to get to hear him read and to be able to share a stage with him, in Chicago, the city I grew up in, at the Poetry Foundation, which is a place where I've attended readings many times.
It's such a beautiful building. You know, it is worth it, ladies and gentlemen, to hear two great poets read, but it's also worth it to see this building. It's at the corner of Dearborn and Superior in the heart of whatever you want to call it, Streeterville, or some people may call it the Gold Coast. Getting this book published, I have to imagine, Grady Chambers, that you had dozens, if not hundreds, of poems from which to choose to try to create this narrative.
I did. Yeah, I was working when I first started to compile this manuscript. I had about a little under 200 pages of poems that I was that I was selecting from, and you know, it's that winnowing down process. I had a lot of quite bad poems, so that made part of that process quite easy. But it was, you know, it was actually quite an anxiety-inducing process because you realize doing it that the thing itself could be put together countless ways. The possibilities really are endless. But what I tried to do is the book is in four sections, and so I tried to take an approach whereby I sort of crafted these four sections that I felt, you know, each was distinct and had a thematic continuity running through it. So breaking the larger book down into the smaller portions was a little bit easier for me to find a form for it.
No question. And there's some marvelous poems in here. I was going to have you read Memorial Day, but I'm going to hold that off and hope that you read that Wednesday when all the listeners here come to the Poetry Foundation to see you. I was also quite taken with Picasso in Milwaukee. Ladies and gentlemen, just whatever you think of poetry, this is I find this a terribly, terribly accessible book, and one, and it's certainly a poet you should keep your eye on, Grady Chambers. Grady, what did your parents think after you go to college and you graduate and you say, hey, Mom and Dad, I want to be a poet, because God knows it's a hackneyed phrase, but there's no money in poetry.
There sure isn't. I had the very happy experience of having full support from both my parents. You know, my father is a custom furniture maker, and my mother does PR and communications, and really has her whole life championed social justice.
Oh no, still doing that. Yeah, still doing
absolutely.
That.
So I'm fortunate to be the child of two parents who each in their own lives found something that they loved and pursued it. And I think for them that was what they wanted most for me. So to see me pursue this, they've been really nothing but supportive.
That's great. Did your mom ever, knowing her affection, I know your mom, and not well, but fairly, I kind of adore her. Did she ever try to steer you into journalism? I would think that would be something that, because I know her affection for certain journalists too. Did she ever try to say, you know, you could have a bigger impact as a journalist, not realizing what was going to happen to journalism in the next 20 years?
No, you know, really it was on my own accord that I studied political science in college, and mm-hmm. she was always very supportive of that. But I think, growing up in the household that I did, and seeing some of some of her work and her example, I do think that had an influence on me pursuing political science as a pursuit in school. But she never really did push me towards journalism. That was something that I had considered, because particularly long-form journalism, the kind of stuff that you see in The Atlantic, The New Yorker, had great appeal to me. But ultimately, I just like making things up more than reporting on them.
Grady, you seem like a charming young guy. I hope I can get over there Wednesday to meet you face-to-face. But he will be at the Poetry Foundation with, I'm going to say colleague, but I think you may consider Henri Cole something of a mentor, because he's the man who recommended you for the Max Ritva Poetry Prize, which was the reason for the publication of your first debut collection of poetry, a slender but impactful volume called North American Stadiums, 35-some poems that are, I try to draw people into poetry, that are absolutely accessible, ladies and gentlemen. You just heard the one that I read. It doesn't get more accessible or, frankly, brilliant than that. Grady, it's great to meet you over the telephone, and knock 'em dead Wednesday, and I hope to meet you that night, too.
I hope so, too. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Keep writing. GradyChambers.com is the website. And commercials are what pay for this station to operate, so here are a couple of them.